Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. I'm your host, Eric, and with me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back on the eve of Codex Knigget. That's right, the Imperial Knights are getting the Codex treatment. I think they're actually becoming a real army, considering there's, what, two, three models in the entire line?
There's going to be three chassis.
And all kinds of variations and mixing and matching. But there's also going to be a lot more depth as we're seeing some of the early releases, both from officially from the Warhammer community site, as well as some more saltier sources. But we're getting pretty close to release date, so accuracy is looking pretty high on these particular area. So curious to see. We're going to get into that in greater depth. But probably one of the biggest news when it comes to competitive play is starting today at 10 a.m. Local time. So we are on West Coast time currently. Las Vegas Open 2019 tickets are on sale as we speak.
I was a little surprised that it's so far out. I mean, trying to imagine how many people probably weren't even really thinking about that yet.
They've been kind of doing a soft sell on it on their webpage and also their podcast as well. But I also remember last year the room block had to be resolved before the holidays because it's, you know, that whole, it's the first week in February. So basically everything needs to be wrapped up organizationalized in terms of final headcount. So realistically, it's only 5 months from the actual deadline. So it's, yeah, it seems a little odd that you're buying tickets in June for an event in February, but given the size, the scope, it's kind of what you, especially a lot of players are traveling by air to get there. Really, kind of now's the time to make plans.
Okay.
I think the curious thing is what kind of numbers will they see this year? Growth of 8th edition, the growth of the ITC, as well as their, let's be honest, they had a great reputation. They've done really well at this event quite a few years in a row now. And will people come? Will more people come? Will people spread out to some of the other events? Because it's not just the 40K championships. There's a 40K friendly. I believe there is a narrative event, plus there are other game systems being played there as well. Will we see sort of a kind of a slowdown in the growth that they've seen over the past few years, or will this skyrocket and finally hit the 512 that they've been looking for?
I can say this. They usually do a night joust, and this next year could be a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, the night joust is a neat event. It's funny. I hear it a lot of people talk about that for an event that everybody brings one model. it's kind of cool. It's very battle bots. So, yeah, we look forward to see what kind of numbers, and best of luck to the Frontline Gaming guys. Make sure that they do continue with their marquee event, especially after seeing what happened over across the pond with their big event. So, but Reese and Frankie are our veterans crew, and they've got a good team, which is, I think, essential to any good tournament. It's having a good team around them to be able to run the event. So I look forward to seeing that. Other crazy news, short and sweet, as we mentioned, Imperial Knights, but also we were kind of talking about this. We knew there were, by process of elimination, a few codices still left to be announced, and we were like, well, when did they get announced them? Because they didn't announce them at the London GT. So we were like, okay, what big event is Games Workshop going to use? And apparently there was a Euro or a UK Toy Fest that...
Games Expo, actually.
There you go. Thank you. So they did announce some upcoming codices.
Yeah. Orcs and Space Wolves also showed off a Gene Stealer Cult model, which appeared to be an aberrant. Anybody who's familiar with that line knows that as of, at least right now, the only way you could get that is through the box set that came with the Death Watch and Gene Stealer called I think it was a game in a box. I don't think it was actually a a starter set. It was, well, it was more of a box game, but that's the only place you can get them.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it either. Kill Team Overkill or something.
Deathwatch Overkill.
Yeah.
Deathwatch Overkill, yeah. And of course, once these orcs and space wolves are out, the only traditional codex that's left is Gene Stealer Cult, if I remember correctly.
That is true. And of course, there's some increasing rumors that a Codex Inari is on its way as well. And of course, Sisters of Battle, but the models required for that codex, we're probably not going to see that until next year. So that's still kind of up in the air, but I have to say, I've been saying it all along, because it's a very strong index. The idea of Codex Orc is very frightening. I just can't imagine what, you know, even talk to some competitive Orc players, just the idea of, can I just get a stratagem that allows me to swing twice for 3 CP like everyone else does? And you just think of what that brings to an Orc army. What else are they going to get when they get the full treatment? We're finally going to see the clans, I'm assuming. It's going to be a pretty fearsome army.
Yeah, I can remember the days of going up against Don's Green Tide, and I'm just imagining that we might be seeing something just as fearsome coming out in the near future.
What's mentioned, you mentioned the Green Tide, and Green Tide has been very popular through 7th edition. That was kind of like one of the few ways to play Orcs competitively with that formation bonus. But I also remember there was the it was actually Don was running this as well. It was like a mega knob spam type thing where it was just, you know, 3 units of mega knobs and in trucks that just rammed down your throat. That was pretty nasty. Go back to 5th edition, the Death Roller spam armies were, you know, hugely popular. This came across the field and smashed into your lines. And now you're going to add, you know, the kind of the balance, because, you know, currently, I can't remember what they're called. The Jump Troop guys. Rocket Boys. No, that's not right. Storm Boys. That's it. You know, Storm Boy spam is very popular right now. So be curious to see what, you know, what they come back with and what, and if it, rumor of a new super heavy on top of that makes it very scary. You know, just what else is this army going to have at this point?
Oh, I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah, me too. Oh, no. So yeah, Knob Bikers. That was the other big. The big list of 5th edition. I forgot about that. And then when it comes to Space Wolves, first of all, will he or won't he? Are we going to get another Primarch? And everybody's thinking Russ will be the next one to tie in with the Space Wolves. Other people are thinking, no, that'll come out later as a separate campaign pack. Who knows? We'll find out soon enough. But Space Wolves have been kind of all over the place in terms of power level. They're usually, you know, way off the charts or frighteningly puss poor. So I'm kind of skeptical a little bit to see what comes out, or cautiously optimistic is probably more what I'm thinking.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what they do. They don't really perform that great right now in tournaments, but I mean, those command point stratagems can make all the difference. I'm
trying to remember. I know the 7th edition codex was one of those that came out, you know, right in that realm when Grey Knights and Dark Eldar, and they all kind of toned down, and then all of a sudden the Eldar and the Necron codex came out and they were completely overpowered. You're like, what happened? How did we miss this memo? And then the few wolf armies I saw were very much formation driven. Ragnar had a army that was a formation. What I'm trying to say is extremely powerful. Some sort of, I can't remember exactly how it worked off the top of my head. But
so the Space Wolves were, I think they were one of the first few for the actual 7th edition style codex. What really helped them out to come back up was during the when the Wolfen came out and they did that campaign book, and then they got the actual Decurion style. That's, I think, what really brought them around as a decent 7th edition army. Before that, they were a little bit on the weak side.
You're right. It was that campaign pack that really brought them back to life. So, anyway, be curious to see if that was, you know, generally what we've seen is what was once a formation is now a stratagem. So curious to see what will come back. One thing I don't miss, though, is hordes and hordes and hordes of little dogs running around characters. I do not miss that at all. I hated playing against it. Didn't make any sense to me. This is not an army. It just was weird looking. I don't know. We'll see. big fan of the Wolfen. I thought those were pretty cool. I love to see the Wolf Scouts come back. They were always a terror in older editions. So, and then there's a lot of flavor in there and making them unique and the sagas and all that stuff. So I'd be really curious to see when it comes out and see what they bring to the table. Be really exciting.
And the bigger question is going to be, which one are they going to do first?
That's a good question. I've not heard one way or the other at this point. So, all right. Well, we'll keep our eyes and ears open. Any news breaks, we'll definitely let you guys know, whether here on the podcast or on our Facebook page at Exterminatus. All right, let's go over. We had a couple events over the weekend of GT status or higher. Let's go over those results right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, folks, and we are back after the break. We had two GT, actually trying to see if the one of them actually got to major level. Probably should have checked that before I hit the record button. Quality podcasting. They were indeed a major. Well, so the first one we're going to talk about is the Bug Eater GT in lovely Omaha, Nebraska. For those of you who don't know, it's actually a really kind of a fundraiser for the local debate team. So the debate team teacher, you know, faculty support person is actually the coach of the debate team and is an avid 40K player. And it turns out many members of his debate team also play 40K. And being in the Midwest there, they draw, as we talked about Kevin a couple of weeks ago, drawing from long distances. I'm looking at the who's who on this particular, you know, standings here. People many states away came to this particular event. And let's be honest, Omaha, Nebraska is not exactly a destination tournament. And especially if you're going to a tournament being played in a high school gym. But lo and behold, they are packing them in and have had a long history of success. So glad to see this event back on the radar and doing well. So without further ado, let's look at the top eight from this year's 2018 Bug Eater GT. So coming in eighth place with Kyle Thompson, seventh place, Justin Kempel, sixth place, JT Graycheck, hope I'm pronouncing that right. In fifth place, Corey Nilmo. We've talked about him. He won an event not too long ago. Fourth place, Ryan Olson, another player from actually from the West Coast. We've talked about him at great lengths. Trent Northington, we talked about him. Came in third. Actually, he was my prediction to win this event. Always comes close. Never quite the top spot there. Looks like he went 5-1. And then we have two players who went undefeated. In second place, we had Jason Barreau. But your 2018 Bug Eater champion is Dan Sammons from Team Outlanders. Ray, have you ever been to Nebraska?
Nope. I haven't even driven through it.
Been to parts of the Midwest, but Nebraska is not one of them. So one of these days we'll get out there.
Nebraska? I wouldn't count Nebraska as the Midwest. That's like central. If I think right, that's the state that's just above Oklahoma. I have been through Oklahoma.
I have to look at the map. I'm not 100% sure. I thought Nebraska was further north than that. But I may be getting it mixed up with Iowa.
That's all right. I might be mistaken with Kansas. It's kind of weird right in there.
And for those of you from that area laughing at us right now, yeah, you can make fun of where I grew up, which is we have got 11 states within 2 miles of each other. So anyway, the other big event over the weekend was the Basement Collective GT, which actually was turned out to be a major event. Great to see them. This is being held up in Ontario, Canada, in Sudbury. So without further ado, let's check out your top eight from north of the border.
Which is kind of crazy to look at.
It's a little crazy to look at. So eighth place, Brandon Smith from Reckless Assault Gaming Club. Very cool name. Number seven, another cool name, Orville Andrews playing Inari, came in seventh place. Jim Vassal with Chaos Space Marines came in sixth. In fifth place, Chris Haynes with Thousand Suns. Fourth place, Davis Sentis with Thousand Suns. Third place, Devin Swan with Inari. Second place, Bradley Crum with Drukhari. And this year's 2018 Basement Collective champion is Archon Skari. Yeah, you know him from Skardcast, does several battle reports and a huge presence on the internet. Playing, yeah, you guessed it, Drukhari, also coming in first place. So two Drukhari armies went undefeated in a major tournament.
So the crazy part is more than that. It's if you look at the top eight, you've got Drukhari, Yunari, which are both elves, and then Chaos Space Marines and Thousand Suns, which are Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how did this shake down? Because, yeah, you've got 1, 2, 3 Drukhari in the top eight, 2,000 Suns in the Chaos Space Marines, so three Chaos armies, and then the lone Inari army making it to the top eight. And if you go down a little further, it doesn't change too much. So let's look at this. We don't do this often on the show, but ninth place, Drukhari, 10th place, Nids, 11th place, Cult Mechanicus, 12th, Drukhari again. 13th place is your first Space Marine list. Diego Pita came in 14th place. He's a noted Astra Militarum player. Then Eldari, Cult Mechanicus again. Then Custodes. And then Cena Custodes and Ulathe, more pointy ears, and then Necrons. If followed by Dark Angels. That rounds out your top 20. So, interesting. I don't know. Drukhari OP? What's going on here?
That's a good question. I never thought I'd see the day when Drukhari are a main staple in the top eight.
It's pretty crazy. And anyways, take a look at Skari's list. He also, if you check out some of his postings, he described his list and how it works, and which was quite helpful. So to start, he starts with a detachment. It's a battalion. Cabal of the Black Heart, he's got two Archons, all with Venom Blades and Splinter Pistols. One of them is his Warlord, and he gave him the Relic of the Living Muse. He also has three units of five Cabalite Warriors, each with a Blaster. And then the Heavy Support slot, he's got three Ravagers with three Disintegrator Cannons each, followed by two Dedicated Transports. He's got two Raiders, also with Disintegration Cannons. So we pretty much know how this one works. Cabalite Warriors are going to go hop in the Raiders, and then the Warlord with the Relic of the Living Muse is going to stick close to those Ravagers. One thing a couple guys have emailed me with questions, well, how does the Archon keep up? One of the key things about the Cabal of the Black Heart, everyone focuses on the Agents of Vect stratagem. They get +1 to the power from table tape. That's good. The power from table pain. The power from pain table. So that means on turn two, they can reroll advance rolls and charges. So therefore, this Archon is easily moving 8 inches plus a rerollable D6. So he can keep up with the Ravagers with no problem. So the second attachment is a spearhead of Hemoculi Funness, Prophets of Flesh. He's got a standard Hemoculus. And one thing he talks about is he ran out of points. He really wanted to kit this guy out with lots of gear. Was not possible with the points. And then he comes in with two two-man Talos units. One Tal is armed with a stinger pod, the other one marked with a haywire blaster. He repeated that twice. Also, all have chain flails, which I have to double check. I think that's rerolls to damage in close combat. I have to double check that. And then his third HQ, heavy support slot for his spearhead. It's a Kronos with spirit probe, spirit leech, and leech tentacles. Sort of a support bot in the back there. And last but not least, he starts off with a witch battalion to round things out. Cult of Strife. It's got Lilith, got a succubus, splinter pistol, and archite glaive, and then three units of five witches. Pretty bare points and no dedicated transports. So a couple of the key things he mentioned that were key to his list. The Ravagers were the bulk of his anti-tank. The Talos was sort of the grinder. The other thing that really made a big difference was he used the Alliance of Agony. So all three of his HQ spots. So he's got Lilith, the Hemoculus, as well as the Archon, all get a Warlord trait. Which made, apparently, Lilith rock hard. Apparently, she was just unstoppable, would just be a blender in close combat. Which, depending on the right targets, I would agree with that. I've seen it go either feast or famine with her, so not sure how that would work. So we'll look at the rest of the top eight. Maybe that can answer our question. But a pretty stock list. But, you know, Skari has been playing Dark Eldar for quite some time, so he knows what he brings to the party. As I mentioned, the second place player, Bradley Crum, also brought Drukhari. However, he was a sinister Archon and did not upload his list. So that has been lost to the webway. Devin Swan was nice enough to be come in third place, but also to upload his Inari list. Quick look at that. He starts off with a battalion with Yavrain, a Spirit Seer, and an Autox Skyrunner. In his HQ slot, he's got three units of 10 Guardian Defenders, one of them having a heavy weapon platform, the other two without, and then two units of 8 Shining Spears. He then follows it up with an Aletok battalion, the Farseer, Warlock, and the Spirit Seer, three units of 5 Rangers, and 3 Wave Serpents. So, from what we talked about in previous shows, it seems like a pretty boring vanilla list. I'm going to keep this list open, because when we talk about Knigget's later, I'd be curious to see how much this list will change once Knights hit the table with their Codex.
All right.
Last one but not least, Chris Haynes with Thousand Suns. I want to look at that list real quick, because this might help in some insight. Yeah, this is exactly what I expected. So he starts with an Outrider detachment, Ahriman on disc, Demon Prince of Zeech with wings and malefic talons. It's got a Zangor Shaman, followed by not one, not two, but three units of nine Zangor Enlightened. Okay. With their nifty bow and arrows. He then adds in another battalion. These are Thousand Suns. Two Demon Princes, Malefic Talons and Wings, two units of Cultists, a bare minimum of 10, followed by another unit of Zangors, looks to be a unit of 25. Then last but not least, he throws in an Alpha Legion Patrol, featuring another Demon Prince, and one unit of 40 Cultists, the other unit of 35 Cultists altogether. That is a ton of bodies.
That is a lot of models.
Yeah. Let's do a quick count here. 1, 2, 3, plus 8, 24, 27 in the first detachment. He's got 40-something in the next one. So we're close to 75. Yeah, he's got about 100. Actually, for Orc standards, it's kind of low. But for Chaos standards, that's pretty crazy. He's got close to 125 models.
That's pretty respectable.
I'm curious to see if Skari played him. It would be, he looks like he did. Because that would be a good matchup, because it's a lot of T3 with low armor saves. I can see how a Drukhari could just rip through that.
The Zangors would be a little bit harder, though.
They're a T4, aren't they?
They're T4, plus they have an Invuln.
As long as it's not a 3-up, it's just weight of fire. That's not a big deal. Interesting. I'm looking at the other Chaos player. He's got more of a traditional list. Supreme Command Detachment, Ahriman, two Demon Princes, followed by a Demon Battalion of two Chains Casters, a Pink Horror Blob of 30, followed by a... Wow, there's something we haven't seen in a while. Brimstone Horrors, a unit of 10, and then three Nurgling Swarms. And then throws in another Alpha Legion Battalion, Demon Prince, Sorcerer, one unit of 10 cultists, two units of 20 cultists, and then nine Khorne Berserkers and a unit of Obliterators and a Rhino for the Khorne Berserkers.
There are certainly certain things that we're seeing in lists that are staples. You see it in the Rangers for Eldar. Thousand Sons. It kind of depends on whether or not they want to go with the cultists or the Zangors. Surprisingly enough, the one army we're not really seeing large spamming armies of is Drukhari in the top 10. They're an example of, you know, not needing to spam units to be able to win.
Yeah, they're interesting because I think also people are really trying to get that. That seem to be very balanced list. Like you, when you see three detachments, it's usually Witch, Kabbalite, and Covens. You're not seeing just one straight Witch cult or straight Covens list yet. So interesting. Yeah, you're not seeing those crazy numbers of models on the table. But yeah, interesting diversity in terms of, you know, we're definitely seeing patterns and understanding what that is. And I think a lot of people are starting to build their list to that. And as we get into this, we'll get into this after the break. With Codex Knights, you know, was one of those armies that was really easy to get into. There's a lot of players with knight models lying around, so it won't be hard to get back into them. Being able to be competitive against a knight army and then competitive against any of the four armies we talked about here, it's hard for one list to do. And to take out that much infantry, you need high, you know, the high dice rolls and high number of attacks, and consequently, you usually don't get that in high strength and high damage. So it's one of those, okay. I could definitely see that an Ari army still doing well with knights moving forward because they have a lot of damage to weapons. But some of those other lists, I'm curious to see how they will play out. So, but we'll get into that in greater detail when we get back to talking about Codex Knights. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is your Basement Collective event. Congratulations to Skari on a great showing and to the tournament organizers for having a great event. After the break, Ray and I dive into Imperial Knights. And we're back after the break. Let's talk all things Knights. Imperial Knights Codex is coming out this coming Saturday, Friday night, for those of you who like to stay up till midnight. Interesting, very polarizing Codex. When this first came out, there were people that loved it, people that hate it, very few in between. And I think 8th edition could be a mending of the fences a little bit, because we've gotten rid of the D mechanic and all the silly house rules that went with it from tournament to tournament. And now they have a toughness value and a wound characteristic, just like everything else. Be curious to see how this all shakes down. Ray, in terms of your opinion, how they've worked in 8th edition and index-wise, we haven't seen a lot of knights so far.
No, in fact, usually when we would see knights, it would be renegade knights in the form of the Chaos Soup. We'd usually see one or two of those with Magnus, some other random units, and a bunch of horrors.
And I hated those lists.
I don't really remember seeing too many Imperium lists that involved knights, to be honest.
Not so much. And what makes them very interesting, you know, this, the stat line has not really changed. The number one thing you need to be focused on, toughness 8, 28 wounds per model. That's the base loadout and has not changed for the new Dominus class. knights that are coming out as well. So when you think about that for a second, toughness 8, how that functions in the current edition. So your humble bolter is wounding on 6s. And everybody gets all upset. Oh, no, bolters will bring it. Okay, let's do the math real quick. Half of your wounds will actually, not even 1 out of 6 of your wounds will get through. And then only a third of those will actually get through the armor save. Yeah, you're not going to kill this thing with small arms fire.
So, yeah, the toughness 8 is for the Dominus. But I do believe the knight, though, your basic knight is a little bit weaker than that.
We'll have to see. I haven't seen that. I think it's still at T8, but all right. Not really. I'll double check that in a second. At least how they were in the index, because I know that really hasn't changed too much. The other thing, though, keep it.
Oh, no. Yeah, they're. I don't. For some reason, I remember them being toughness 7.
So they are toughness 8. Okay. Fair enough. They're toughness 8, yeah. Going further with that thought process. Okay, so bolters aren't going to hurt it. All your T5, T6, even T7, which is usually good enough to start doing damage on other vehicles, still wounding on 5s. So you're still going to need some level of volume of fire or hopefully some sort of high damage. So once you get past the armor save or the, don't forget the 5-up invul from the ion shields, you're going to at least tick off a couple wounds there. And then strength 8 and higher, not a whole lot of it in the game. And so this is going to be one of those, it's going to be a battle of attrition and really wear down these particular knights, or we might be seeing a radical shift back to those guns that do bring to bear something higher than strength 8. I don't think we've seen a whole lot of this because one of the things we've had so far that was T8 was a Lehman Russ tank. We haven't seen a whole lot of those from Astro Militarum players, which is funny because they have everything you need. They are T8, 12 wounds, and also have a battle cannon, which is also strength 8 and does multiple damage. So stands a chance at least at mowing down a knight, especially if they remain stationary and get to shoot twice. That being said, staying stationary versus knights may not be in your best interest. So the basic, both Dominus and regular knights profiles, pretty much unchanged. They still have 3 levels for degradation. So a lot of people are wondering if the Dominus knights would have that 4th level, like the Porphyrion. Not the case at all. So if you're in tip-top shape and at least 15 wounds, you're looking at a movement of 10 inches, weapon skill of 4, and a Blixus skill of 3. And then as you take damage, you'll drop down to a 7-inch move, and then hitting close combat on 5s, which becomes a pretty significant drop, and then Blixus skill of 4. And then once you get them below 8 wounds, they're only moving 4 inches. So that hopefully will give you some opportunity to scoop up some objectives while they kind of stumble about. Weapon skill of 6 and a ballistic skill of 5.
So I got to be honest, the weapon skill being up.
Well, this is the Castellan armor. This is one of the Dominus chassis. So I'm not sure if the standard knights maintain the weapon skill of 3+, but it did surprise me as well. And I think that's what they were in the past. Probably should look at this ahead of time.
So the knights. Now the the standard knights that we see we're used to seeing, which according to one of the articles I was reading, are now going to be known as the Questoris. Their weapon skill and ballistic skill starts at 3 and goes up to 5. So it could be the idea being that it's with the Dominus being larger, that they're a little bit more lumbering, slower. So it wouldn't have as good of a an ability to do close combat just because it would be
as we slower. Venture further into our experiment here. So interesting to see that might be where they get in, you know, get opportunity to get in closer and use.
So yeah, to be honest, if you're getting if you're running these knights right, it doesn't look like you're going to be getting into close combat.
What was the weapon skill and what's the skill of armature knights? Do you remember off the top of your head?
So the war glaives they put in Forgebane show at 3+ going up to 5+.
Okay. So much like the middle.
Yeah.
Medium-sized knights that we're accustomed to. Okay, fair enough. As I mentioned, you probably don't want to sit still for too long. Let's kind of go over some of the weapons. So the basic loadout for the Knight Castellan, which seems to be the shootier version of the larger Dominus model, starts with 2 Siege Breaker cannons. It's 2 of them. 48-inch range, heavy 2d3. That 2d3 is so much more powerful than the d6. I mean, you're guaranteed 2 shots. Just big difference in rolling that 1d6. Strength 7, AP minus 1, damage 3. So remember, you've got 2 of these things. So you're lobbing 4. That's 8 shots of this downfield. And then the one that everybody's griping about on the internet, the Shield Breaker Rockets. These are heavy 1, strength 10, AP minus 4, d6 damage. Can only fire 1 missile per turn, and it ignores invul saves. So you probably say, oh, it's not so bad. It is until you combine it with the Oathbreaker Guidance System stratagem. So you add 2 command points, and that allows you to shoot at characters, even if they're not the closest model.
So for 2 command points, you can basically give them the sniper rule.
You got it. And you are, as I mentioned... it doesn't have the range on that. I take that back. As I mentioned, I did not mention that. But strength 10, AP minus 4, d6 damage. You've got a pretty good chance of taking out a character of choice.
Yeah. That being said, it's 2 command points. And if you're one of those people trying to do nothing but knights, you're looking at starting the game off with 6.
So let's talk about that real quick. Let's talk about these knights detachments, because it's not as simple as, oh, I take the super heavy detachment in the back of the book. They've added a couple new wrinkles. Let's talk about that as we go before we get into more of this in depth. So if your army consists of more than one knight in this battle forge, all knights must be from the same household. So at first it's like, okay,
that's
not surprising. But the tricky part is when you think about how easy it is to mix and match two Space Marine chapters, you know, Covens and Witches in the same list for Drukhari, Alaytok and Samhain for Eldar, etc., etc. You don't have that much room, and points-wise, with all these Knigets to mix and match multiple households. So you're pretty much playing mono faction.
Yeah. And in fact, it looks like they want you to do that. They do say that all the knights will get the same household traditions, with, of course, the exception of the Freyblades, which makes sense. This is the big thing, and I'm just going to jump straight to it. You cannot get the command point bonus if you're running too many of the small knights. You need to run 3 of the Questorus or the Dominus knights, which are, of course, the standard size and the newer, bigger one.
This is kind of a big deal, because right off the bat, 3 knights, you're going to fill out that detachment. You're not going to be able to flood the field with that. It's almost like the reverse rule of 3. It's kind of funny. Doesn't have to be 3 of the same knights, but you need to have at least 3. Otherwise, you do not get the command point benefits for that detachment. And they need command points.
Certainly. Of course... you have to have 3 or more knights in a detachment for the command point benefits as well. Which you're not going to be running around with just a couple of super heavy auxiliary. So that's almost not even needed to be said. And then, of course, with three or more knights, you must select one knight to gain the character keyword.
Which is a pretty big deal, because that will open up a whole lot of add-ons and upgrades, similar to relics and whatnot, to your knights. And the relics are fairly strong in this particular codex. So, get into those as we come across them. There's quite a few to go over.
Yeah. So one nice thing is they are reducing the points on the knights. So the a good example is, I believe the knight the chassis for the knights going down to about 280 or 290 points, around there. I do remember that the Avenger Gatling cannon is dropping 20 points, according to what I was reading. But not a lot of other changes other than that in your standard knight.
Yeah. But that adds up pretty quick, so.
Yeah. The Armigers are dropping in price. I believe the Helvern is supposed to be 170 points base. And you'll probably only be paying for whichever gun you put up on top, whether it be the Heavy Stubber or the Melta Gun.
And talking to a lot of players who do play Imperial Knights, that was much needed. They felt that the Armigers were just overpriced.
Yeah. For anyone with the Warglaives, that's down to 160 before the Top Gun points. And then, of course, probably one of the knights everybody's waiting for, the, I believe it's called the Knight Perceptor. And then, of course, Canis Rex, which is the Freeblade character. That's supposed to be, I believe the points that was listed was the full loadout at 450 points. But I can't say that with 100% certainty, so give yourself a little bit of salt there on that one. But the weapon on that sounds pretty good. Did you take a look at that?
Let's take a look at this. So Canis Rex comes with a Lazen Pulsar. 36-inch range, heavy 2d6, strength 6, AP minus 2, damage d3. That's per shot, by the way. 2d6, d3 shots. It's pretty nasty. And then he has an opportunity to make it a high-intensity shot, which increases the, excuse me, cuts the range in half to 18 inches. Heavy d6, strength 12, AP minus 4, damage d6.
So it's half as many shots, half as far, but twice as strong, twice as powerful. And then he's also got Freedom's Hand. I kind of find that name ironic. But it's a strength 16 minus 4 AP and 2d6 damage with a minimum flat 6 flat damage.
Oh, I always heard it was just 6 damage. Oh my gosh, that's 2d6 with a minimum of 6 damage. Yikes. Holy cow.
I'm guessing that means that the weapon reads that any roll of less than a 6 is going to be 6.
Just when you thought the neutron laser was powerful.
So he's got a warlord trait of minus 1 leadership to all enemies within 12 inches. And then he's got the following quality and burden. Legendary hero, once per battle, you can reroll a single dice for this model. And the Freeblade can only target and charge the closest enemy unit.
No, not at all.
It's not that bad for a burden. So,
and he has this little nifty ability similar to we've seen in other games. The driver can pop out so he doesn't explode. And the knight pilot runs around. He's got a little pistol. So you got to keep killing him at the after you've killed the knight.
Yeah, not only that, but the knight doesn't count as being destroyed until you kill that little dude running around.
Absolutely insane. That is a nasty, nasty lot of opportunity there. So,
So I kind of want to jump back around and jump back up to the Dominus class. Start talking back more on some of those weapons. Back with the Knight Castellan, it's got that volcano cannon.
So let's talk about the volcano lance. 80-inch range, heavy D6, so D6 shots, strength 14, AP minus 5, 3D3 damage, and can reroll failed wound rolls when targeting Titanic units.
At worst, it's one hit. That one hit is going to get rid of whatever normal save you've got. So you're only going to be able to use an invuln or feel no pain style. But that's also a minimum of 3 damage. But what we're probably going to see on average dice roll is about 3 shots, each one doing as much as, on average, 6 damage apiece.
Yep. Yeah, 3 shots, 2 hits, wounding on 2s. So we'll call it 2 wounds, and you hit it right in the head. No armor save, only if you have an invul. And on so 6 hits, so that's 12 damage each. So you just, you have rhinos, you're picking them up. Wave serpents, okay, maybe he needs an above average roll because you're going to be minus 1 to each shot, bring him down to, you know, 5. So he's doing 10 wounds on your 12 wound hull of your skimmer. It's strength 14. Other than other T8 vehicles, which outside of knights there aren't that many, you know, some of your Necron super heavies and the aforementioned Leban Russ, he's wounding on 2s.
And then you've got the plasma decimator on his other arm, 48-inch range, 2d6 shots, strength 7, minus 3 AP.
I think it's just 1 damage.
1d6 damage, I believe. Okay. 1 damage. That's not bad. Not quite as powerful as I might have expected, but it does have the ability to overcharge to strength 8, minus 3 AP, and 2 damage. But it does say that the bearer suffered 1 mortal wound after all shots have been resolved.
So normally you think about this, you know, my Dark Angel squad, I could lose a couple guys if I roll 1s. Or on a Riptide, I'm losing a wound here and there. I need to be a little careful. You've got 28 wounds on this knight. So if I shoot this every turn, whoop-de-doo, I'm losing 6 wounds. Overcharge every day, twice on Sunday if you can.
Or there's, of course, the option of if you can give it a relic because it's a character, you can give it the better version, Call's Wrath. This is, of course, only if your knights are part of the Mechanicus. It's strength 8, minus 4 AP and 2 damage base. Overcharged, it goes strength 9, minus 4 AP and 3 damage. And the bearer suffers a mortal wound on hit rolls of 1. So a little bit more more along the lines of your basic plasma weapon.
So just put that in perspective. 2d6 shots, so it's 7, we'll say 7 shots on average. Hitting on 3s, so that means you're hitting on 5 hits, 4 wounds at strength 9, minus 4, so let's say, this should all go through. That's 12 wounds right there, again. And you're mowing through big units. I mean,
looking at the Knight Valiant. So this one, where the Castellan is more of your longer range gun, walking gun platform. This one's a bit more in your face. Its base loadout is about 595 points, and the weapon almost everyone's drooling over is the Conflagration Cannon. It's a 18-inch 3d6, strength 7, minus 2, 2 damage, and it's a flamer weapon, so it automatically hits.
So, no math required here. You're averaging 11 hits per shot at 18 inches. strength 7, so that means you're most likely, if you're going after infantry blobs, you're wounding on 2s, if you're maybe even 3s, depending if you're going against marines. And then against vehicles, you're probably wounding on 4s. So you're still inflicting. So let's go the vehicle route. 10, you got 5 wounds. Ooh, they're not going to be doing 6 to 8 wounds on a vehicle. Most vehicles are going to be crippled by that. Probably knocked down to the lowest tier. Against, let's even say like a Poxwalker swarm. This is ideal. 10, 11 hits. You're wounding on 2s. So you're probably doing 9 to 10 wounds. And then being 2 damage, go ahead and make 2 of your Disgusting Resiliency rolls per model.
Well, or let's look at other things. The things you're probably going to see the most, cultists and your infantry from the Eye Guard.
That's correct.
Which don't have that option. You're looking at no saves, if I think right. So you're probably going to be, unless there's 30 models, you're probably going to be looking at wiping out a squad every time you do it. Because you figure you'll take out, on average, what, 9 guys? 9 guys just in that, just with that weapon alone. And unless they use command points, or I think it's Lord Commissar, they can do it where only one person leaves because they get shot in the head by their leader.
Yeah, there are a couple chapter tactics type things that allow it, but not a lot.
You know, outside of that, you're rolling leadership 6 or 7, and you lost 9 guys. You're losing probably about 14 guys no matter what. I mean, total, including the guys, of course, that got lost in the actual gunshot.
So pretty nasty stuff. Beware as these things come closer. In addition to that, they have the Thunder Coil Harpoon. 12-inch weapon, strength 16. Ah. AP minus 6. I have to ask myself, what's the point? But I guess I can cover, you could possibly do better, but okay. Damage 10. And then does an extra D3 mortal wounds if you're targeting a vehicle or a monster.
So that is very much the weapon it uses against the vehicles and monsters. It's the, hey, look, I see you. Okay, you're dead now.
Okay, so you're not getting down to 18. Below half with one shot.
Yeah. There are only 2 things about this weapon that I am disappointed about. The first is, it is one shot. I'm not surprised, but I'm a little disappointed. The second thing is there is no mechanic that allows you to bring whatever you just harpooned into range of close combat.
Yeah, I kind of missed that. I had that in previous editions. So,
but you know what? I don't remember to have a stat, like a close combat stat to it. Or is it just a gun?
It's just a gun.
Okay, so despite the fact that this one is more in the face, it's still not really meant for close combat.
You got to bring up a good point. You really need that other guy, the Freeblade character, if you really want close combat.
Yeah. Or you, what knights that you built to suit that case. Maybe you've got the Questorus that's close combat. Maybe you've got some Warglaives running around.
And just a preview real quick. There is a stratagem out that allows a knight, one, you know, single model knight, to advance twice in the same turn. Very useful, so that I can get up
useful.
Get up close real fast. So,
I really think what we'll probably end up seeing in these lists, I don't see anybody running multiple of the Dominus level knights. I think at most we'll probably only see one. I can definitely see the Valiant being the most common that we'll see, depending on the way that they strategize. And then we'll probably see 2 of the Questorus Knights to go along with it if they're really focusing on having Knights in their list. And then I think whatever they choose as far as Dominus class goes, they'll most likely complement the 2 Knights, the 2 Questorus Knights, to focus more on what the Dominus class lacks in. So I think we're going to see, if someone's running around with the Valiant, we're going to see knights that focus more on long-range fire. if they've chosen a Castellan, I think we're going to see knights that are a little bit more close combat oriented. At the same time, if it's the Castellan they choose, they'll probably also focus more on having the Avenger Gatling cannon for more shots to kind of make up for the fact that the Castellan's not quite going to take out as many models as the Valiant would. And then I think we're going to see the various armorers kind of fill that out.
I'm with you for most of it. I'm just going to bring an interesting counterpoint. Well, I think it's interesting. You guys can decide. I agree with you, Dominus, to Questors, but I then think they're going to throw in a cheap battalion of Imperial Guard just to sponge up some command points, especially because they have this one stratagem here where it allows the Dominus Knight to extend its ion shield to a nearby Imperium unit. So I think the days of company commanders with mortar teams isn't going away. And you probably can probably see even some Dawn Eagle jet bikes mixed in there, too.
I think it's really going to depend on how many points are left over in the list. We don't know all the points. We know that if you want to do knights and you actually want to be able to use their command point and stratagems, we're looking at probably a good 1,600 to 1,800 points. So what can you fit in that leftover 200 or 300 point, maybe even up to 400 points?
Yeah, I think that'll be the key question. What do you fill that 400 points with?
I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of, you know, armies that are going to go outside of it for the all the extra command points. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see people just go Mono Knight. I really think that this might be one of the few cases where we'll see at least some people go just one codex.
I can see that too.
And the biggest reason I think that they'll do that is because of the potential firepower of the Helverins. I could see two of those taking out a 10-man squad, your basic 10-man squad. And you can fit, I wouldn't be surprised if you could fit four of them in a list once the codex comes out.
Interesting. Okay. You could probably see a little variation over. You got the mini knights, you got the big guys with infantry support. The days of the single knight might be back. I don't know. I think, because that was always the problem, even in the heyday of knights, was one knight was dead meat, but three knights was strong.
Yeah. And one thing that'll help too is there's that relic that basically allows that character knight to hold an objective even if they're outnumbered.
Oh yeah, forgot to mention that. Yes.
So, hey, you've got 50 guys around me. I'm still holding this objective. In the meantime, I will stomp, because let's be honest, it's probably going to be on a Questors. I don't see them people going into the Dominus for the character or in Warlord. I think that just presents itself as too much of a target. I think there's a better chance that we'll see the Questors be the ones that get the character keyword and to become the Warlords and all that.
Well, one thing's for sure is they got a ton of stratagems, and some of them are like, well, yeah, every army got those so far, but when you combine them with the knights, it's just kind of, wait a minute, holy cow.
Yeah, and let's be honest, though, these are probably the most specific stratagems I've seen. You know, each army, there's been plenty of things that I'll say, you know, it has to be this or it has to be that, but these, look, some of the command points in the knights specifically say it has to be an Armiger or a Questoris or a Dominus. So, very specific.
Yeah, compared so to interest of time, kind of just do a pre-fly roll, what they have. There's definitely an opportunity to re-roll hit rolls against models with the fly keyword. You can, there's a lot, but you can, if your knight is destroyed, you can spend a stratagem to try make it blow up on a 4-up if it didn't already blow up originally. Interesting, you can use a stratagem to allow them to advance and charge in the same turn. That's 2 CP. This one I think was funny just because of role standpoints. I don't know how useful this will be. But Devastating Reach, one command point. A knight may hit enemy models in a building within 2 inches of models and within 6 inches of the base. Cannot use its feet. So that whole, I'm going to hide on the second floor and not be assaulted. Eh. Spend a command point and I can smack you.
I just remembered one thing that might be actually a little bit pertinent for people to remember when it comes to these new Dominus. That's what happens when you kill them.
Oh yeah, they go boom.
They've got the dual plasma core explosion. You roll 2d6, and if you roll a 6 on any one of those, everything within 2d6 suffers d6 mortal wounds. If you roll d6s on both your dice, that range becomes 3d6 inches. So I want you people to think about that. That's the possibility of everything within 12 to 18 inches from the base, which is not circular, and it's rather large. You could have potentially 1/6 of the entire board get hit with d6 mortal wounds. That's quite the explosion.
Just, yeah, be careful. The old days of swarming a knight may not be the best idea.
And also, keep your knights apart from each other, because the last thing you want is to be one of those people, and I've seen it happen, I've made an opponent do it, knights dominoing explosions into each other. You don't want to have one knight take out another knight, and have that take out another knight. Yeah, keep your knights far apart.
What other one? It's, again, one of those hilarity-type things. Okay, how many codices have we seen come out that, spend the command points and you get to set up anywhere on the table at the end of the movement phase more than 9 inches away from an opponent? Yeah, guess what? Knights get it too. You have to be within 6 inches of a table edge, but that's kind of scary. For 3 command points, you can essentially, deep strike or more of a scout move. It's coming in from 6 inches from a table edge. A knight. Just like, ah! So,
is that specific to which kind of chassis or no?
Not according to this source. It says you may put this model into play at the end of any movement phase, 6 inches from a table edge, and up to at least 9 inches away from any models once per battle only.
So, the first thing that comes to mind is Armigers. Does it describe it as something that happens before the game begins? Like when your Armiger Knight would actually be a squadron of multiple?
It says this model, so singular. So obviously this is somebody paraphrasing, but is that a questor? I have no idea. But just the whole idea of a close combat oriented or even just the a medium range shooty guy all of a sudden being in your flank in your deployment zone. Ah! And people get surprised by, scout squads. This is a knight.
So as we move closer to this weekend's release and the subsequent tournaments where we'll see them, I'm really curious to see how people choose to play them. And more importantly, which knights become the go-to in an actual
me too.
Imperial Guard
it's
army.
It's definitely going to shake things up quite a bit. So keep a sharp eye on how this changes things. So, lesson to mirror, you need to come up with a solution to put kill 28, toughness 8 wounds with a 5-up invul. Alright. After the break, we'll go ITC top 10 for this week, as well as upcoming ITC events around the world. Welcome back after the break. Let's go over your ITC top 10. We've had some movement as now the London GT results have been added to these overall standings. So who is still in the top 10? Who bottoms out? Starting at number 10, Andrew Ford dropped 2 spots, formerly 8th place. Which means Jessica Bowman and Anthony Bellum have dropped out of the top 10. Moving into 9th place, leapfrogging after a strong performance at the London GT, is Jared Friedman. He comes in a solid 9th place and a 3-point lead over Andrew Ford. Friend of the show Don Husen, as well as Ryan Olson and Bruce Merker, all dropped down 1 spot but retain their previous leads. Don has a 3-point lead over Jared. Ryan has a 9-point lead over Don, and Bruce Merker has a sizable lead. He actually has about an 18-point lead over Ryan Olson. All of these players move down one slot to make room for, that's right, the American who conquered London. Jeff Robinson moves into fifth place now with 549 points, a 2-point lead over Bruce Merker. Your top four remains unchanged. Mitch Pelham in fourth place with a 5-point lead over Jeff Robinson. TJ Langan with a 560 points, 6-point lead for third place over Mitch Pelham. Josh Death has still a commanding 70-point lead over TJ Langan. And your number one player in the ITC this week is once again Matt Rutt with another commanding 61-point lead over Josh Death. Giving that perspective, he's got a 130-point lead over TJ Langham. And they both have played the same number of events. It's insane. But we have quite a few big events still coming up later this year. Greg, what do we got going on next weekend?
All right. Next weekend, we've got the Beef and Wing Brawl. And that's at the Buffalo Marionette Niagara in Buffalo, New York.
That sounds like a must go to.
It's going to be quite the venue, if nothing else, for the scenery. The GCWA 2018. That's in... I wouldn't know how to pronounce it. Looks like Dibberville Civic Center. Bayou Wars 26. That's in Dibberville, Mississippi. The Warhammer 40K Louisville Slugga at Hero.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah, Hero Comics and Gaming in Louisville, Kentucky. And, Badgercon. Can't forget that one. That's in Strathdale, Victoria. I can't really tell you the city because they give you GPS coordinates, interestingly enough.
Well, lock in your transporter centers to that location and enjoy yourselves. But we'll have all updates from not only the Knights Code X, but also any other news coming along for new releases, as well as updates on those four events next week's show. For this week, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
Thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.